people making claims that may or may not be true, people speaking as experts on things that they might not be experts on, are putting people in real harm. And that was, for me, the purpose of that program last night. It was obviously a deeply personal attack on Kate Chemerani, which is unacceptable. That's not journalism. That's not journalism as I understand it. And it's terrible for her to have to put up with it. And the family, who I believe are exploited by the producers of that program. I've reached out to Spring, the producer and the director of the program. But the bigger issue here is, I mean, they make a household name out of Kate Chemerani, and she'll be harassed, I suppose, now online, and she'll be harassed when she's out on the street because of it. But the wider issue is here, they're not going to allow any longer, whatever the topic is, open, free discussions, exchange of information. It is now the gloves are off. We say who the experts are. They may opine. Nobody else may opine. Now, without any further ado, because time does disappear on the programme, let's welcome back to the show Kate Chemerani. Kate, thanks for coming on. How are you? Not been easy today, I wouldn't imagine.
I'm good. Thank you. How can I complain? I have a roof over my head. I have food. I have my health. And I have a voice to fight for the truth for my daughter and the medical cause of her death, which is what this is all about, what they're trying to hide.
And we're going to come back to that because we're on till seven, you and me, right?
I've also got somebody who's a former medical researcher who we've been working closely with, and we've gone through all of the bundle. We've gone through all of Paloma's medical notes that she got through subject access. We've researched every single thing. We spent thousands of hours researching it, and he's more than happy to join as well.
Great. Yeah, I have no problem with that. Yeah. Look, you sent me everything. I'll need to review that myself before I can talk with.
I'm about to send you lots more.
I work alone. I don't have a producer or an editor,
yeah,
so I'll have to have a look at that.
Statements of my actual daughter. That was what she made to the High Court, which you will think, well, why was she in the High Court? Well, you're going to hear why. And what my daughter has been, what has happened to her and what they've tried to do. And if you think this is just my family, trust me, what has come out over this is coming to all of you.
Right, can we come to that? Can we come to that in a bit? Because I want to start off with the program. Look, I don't know how to ask you this. Your sons are on national television and they're saying we believe that mum killed our sister. Why do you think they contacted Panorama to do it? And before you answer that, just very quickly, it occurs to me, and I might be wrong, but Gabriel and Sebastian, they seem to be very sincere about it. Now, I'm not saying they're right. Of course, I'm not saying that. I don't know. But they seem to be adamant that you convinced Paloma not to take the conventional treatment and that in some way contributed to her death. You're a mum, you gave birth to those lads. How difficult is it to deal with that?
They're not the sons that I remember. I know that Gabriel went through the whole process recently for MI6 and then got called back. Sebastian went to Eton. And completely changed, actually, when he was in Eton, completely. And as a consequence of that, a lot of things that I've learned from the girls and from what he's done, I believe that my boy, Sebastian's in a lot of trouble. He's going to get himself into a lot of trouble. He's done some very foolish things, dangerous things, and he knows what he's done.
No, he's not here to...
No, I'm not going to say it.
Yeah, and I really appreciate that.
My daughters know what he's done.
And I appreciate
it. And he's very fortunate that so far nothing's been said.
No, but he's on Twitter today, and it's one of the most extraordinary exchanges.
I'm not sure that's him. That's a photograph of when he was 18 in a dinner suit that I bought for him. He's a lot older than that now. Why would he use a photograph like that?
I don't know, but if it is him, he's making some very serious allegations.
Yeah,
he's saying
I heard that
you were abusive to him when he was growing up.
You know, that I'd
beaten him.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because he also talks about me having a termination, which has never happened. Me it's in my medical records. I've never had anything. My medical records, please, please go ahead. You can all see my medical records. There's no ever any termination, never anything, any treatment or even anything for depression or anything like that about me. Everybody knows I used to volunteer for the Cats Protection League. I've fostered loads of cats. I'm a big cat lover. I've got cats and dogs and hand-reared squirrels. Everybody, so to say, I've killed pets. They're trying everything. Now, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Your medical records would be private, so nobody would have access to those except for you, right?
But so, I would, listen, if people wanted to have a look at them, that's where I've got nothing to hide. Zero.
Yeah, and you know, I'm not saying you do have anything to hide. I'm completely on the fence here. I do like you. I mean, I've never met you. I like your moxie, and you had a lot of very important things to say back in 2020, 2021, but I don't know you, and I've got to be fair to everybody. You're right, it might not be Sebastian tweeting today, but the tweets are very, very, very personal. He's kind of intimated that he might come on with me at a later date, but he is saying, you know, there was physical abuse in the family, that you abused Paloma, physically now, and he's saying that... He's saying that you had an affair with his tennis coach and all of this sort of stuff. It's all out there. It's ugly stuff. It can't be easy. How do you respond to that?
Well, first of all, my four children all excelled and went to the top grammar schools in the country. They played harp, violin, piano, saxophone, flute, their guitar. They did rugby. They were all in a swimming club. They were all in a life-saving club. The girls did ballet. The boys did judo. They did rugby. They did an activity nearly every day of the week. They had extra tutoring to get them through the 11 plus to get into the grammar schools because we were out of county. Sebastian then went to Eton on a full scholarship.
Right, kid.
Paloma went to Rodine on a scholarship. She was in The Guardian and The Times as having the highest accolade. Sebastian did. They then went to the Russell Group universities. Now, if you think very logically about that, surely, and we know that when children are abused, the schools pick it up. The children might look unkempt. They won't thrive. They will show reclusiveness. They won't thrive in school. There was none of that. Social services would have picked it up. The police would know. Now, Sebastian was arrested on a couple of occasions. His brother phoned the police and his sister phoned the police when they were much older, and he'd assaulted them. Not me. And also, and he was taken away in a police car and spoken to. And that was kind of when we were getting divorced. No divorce is easy for any child. I did have a 9-day affair and then left my marriage. It wasn't because of that. I wasn't happy at all. My ex-husband and I now are very much united for the truth about Paloma. He's been over here at Christmas. He was over for Paloma's birthday with his beautiful wife and their little boy, who is the sibling of my children. So it's very important to me that they're all happy, because this is all of our lives. So we have another daughter, Oriana. She's beautiful. She's in her last year of university doing a master's. She's not speaking to them either, nor is their grandmother.
It's terrible, this. But do you know what? Listening to this, this is awful, isn't it?
It's propaganda.
It's terrible.
It's what,
well, can I ask you?
It's what propaganda does, and the reason.
Yeah, but just before, can I jump in just before you? Can we not mention, like, Sebastian might have been arrested? Let's not do that. That's not fair, that. Now, look, it isn't.
Well, I think it's very fair, Richie, because you've just stated on this radio show to your viewers what he has alleged in a thing on Twitter, if it is him. Very damning things. Now, I've just given you my response to that, all of which can be proven 100%. It's on police record. All of it, all the school records, all social services records. There is no safeguarding issues. So I have a right to answer those, and I've answered them with 100% honesty, and I know that exactly what I've just said to you cannot
be refuted. Fair enough. Look, trust me that if and when he comes on the programme, I will ask him the proper questions. Of course I will. Can we deal with, because we're going to talk about... So what I'm doing, Kate, I'm looking at the time, and I'm going to make sure that we don't end up with only a little bit of time to talk about what you think what you believe happened to Paloma. But what I want to focus on just for the next few minutes is this. I can't get my head around this. Look, I know who you are and what you do. And I know you've got very strong opinions about oncology, about chemotherapy and cancer. And I'm going to say, I've interviewed many men and women over the years who worked in oncology and chemotherapy, and they don't speak very highly of it either. But your two lads seem to be very, very sincere in their belief that Mum, they're obviously hurting very bad, as you are. Their sister has passed away last year. Mum intervened when maybe she shouldn't have, and if she didn't, Paloma might still be here. She might have had a better fighting chance. And that what you did was you introduced her to therapies like Gerson therapies and stuff like this, unproven. And they're saying, effectively, by intervening like that, Mum killed Paloma. Now, I don't believe, you know, that they're making that up. Like, they believe that. And that's a very difficult place for them to be in. Like, so how do you respond to that and say, guys, this is what happened?
First of all, I didn't introduce my daughters to the Gerson therapy. I did the Gerson therapy following surgery in 2012 for 2 years. I did it, and I'm still alive 13 and a half years on. I'm not anti-chemotherapy, and I'm not anti-oncology. I have people come to me who are doing those treatments, who have tumours in such a place that unless they do something like that to shrink the tumour or surgery, it's not going to help by doing diet because of where it is. So that's a mistruth in itself. Second, there is, I just sent you Paloma's full statement to the High Court. Paloma. Yeah. Paloma entered the hospital. She had a pain in her chest. She went several times. She had pain in her shoulder. And they did a biopsy. And I knew nothing about this. So then she's in Sweden on holiday and she gets a phone call to come home from Sweden immediately to go to this hospital. She called me. She told me she didn't know why she had to go to the hospital. She goes there. She arrives. I had to ring and find out more. Nobody told her anything that was going on. And the next day, she was told she had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma B. So I arrive at the hospital. And the first thing I ask is, have you given her Fragmin? She's just taken a flight. That was the first thing, because I was concerned about clotting, because you have a higher incidence of clotting when you have cancer.
So it's a blood thinner and you wanted to know how to give her the blood thinner.
And yeah, they gave her Fragmin. I then asked if she could be nursed upright, because I was concerned when she showed me the scan of where it was. She needed to be nursed in an upright position and not lying down. And I also asked if they'd seen these small marks on her chest, and they didn't. And they hadn't even examined her. I then asked, could we, in front of Paloma and I, could we have a copy of the histology, that's the biopsy, and the blood results, please? Because we wanted a second, third, and fourth opinion. So we had a oncology team in Mexico, in Iran, in Italy, and in America who were going to look at it. I think that is absolutely crucial, that you get a second and third opinion. So the doctors were on strike. I went off and I asked for these, and I was met with hostility. And Paloma,
why do you think that is? Why were they hostile, do you think? Because they knew who you were?
No, because I know from working as a nurse, you're not supposed to, as a relative, start asking questions. You do as you're told. You don't want a patient asking. They said that they agreed to give me the bloods. And the doctor said, are you a doctor? And I said, it doesn't matter what I am. My daughters requested them. She said, are you a lawyer? I said, again, it doesn't matter what I am. And she said, can we have your full name? I said, that's not necessary. All you need to know is, as Paloma said, I'm Mrs. Shemarani and I'm her next of kin. And I said, and I'm also the power of attorney, which Paloma had at that stage said, can you be power of attorney? And I wasn't that on my own in the end. It was her father, myself, Simone Plout, and another friend who lived around the corner who was the reserve. So she had a good team. Several hours later, I got the bloods and I asked if they had done Epstein-Barr. I asked if they'd done a full thyroid screen. I couldn't see those. And then later I got home, I left the unit And they said to me, could Paloma have a small dose of steroids? They asked me. And I said, yes, believing a small dose to be under 20 milligrams, probably 5 to 10. She was very small. She weighed under 8 stone, really. She was only a 3.5, 4 in a shoe. She was very petite framed, tiny. And I went home. And then Dr. Aaron Adey, a Mohan, the consultant hematologist, called me at home and asked who I was. I said, Mrs. Shemarani. And she wanted to know who I wanted to give this histology to. And I said, it didn't matter. I'd like a copy of it. And I said, Paloma's godfather and uncle is Iran's top urologist. And they had an oncology team there and they wanted to take a look at it. And she said, what's his name? I said, it doesn't matter what his name is. I'm just asking you for the histology, please.
Can I ask you this, Kate? Sorry for the interruption. Why couldn't the family doctor in Iran basically, out of courtesy, write an email or phone the hospital here in the UK to say we'd like to
see?
You
can't.
Why not?
You can't, because you're not their doctor. And because of GDPR. It's GDPR. And Paloma has a right. She was 22 years old with full capacity. So it's up to her. So I had to get Paloma's permission. It wasn't for me to ask for them. Paloma had to ask.
She has to do it.
For them
to give
it to me.
She's an adult, yeah.
So she wanted to get a second opinion. Absolutely, you should. So the results were never given to us, the histology. She said that we could have them. She would get those for us. So I left the hospital to go to get Paloma some pajamas and stuff because she'd come straight from Sweden. And I drove a long way, an hour and a half back to where I live, let my dogs out, another 40 minutes one way, 40 minutes back to my home to get, you know. And then the next day, I think I was working on TNT in the morning and I drove another hour and a half back to the hospital with the food and everything. Now, but what had happened during the night, Paloma called me. And she said, Mummy, I'm so tired. The beeping of the machine was in the background. She said, they keep taking bloods. It was about midnight. And I said, what do you mean they keep taking bloods? And she said, well, they keep coming every couple of hours to take bloods out of my arm. And I said, what's that beeping? She said, it's the machine that's got a saline flush in it. I said, you don't put saline flushes in a machine. What are you talking about? And I said, what do you see? And she said to me on the telephone, it's a machine with an IV and it's got a bag of fluid. I said, what does it say? And I think she said saline at the time. I said, is there a yellow sticker on the bag? And she said, yes, there is. And I said, what does the sticker say? And she looked, she said, I can't read it. I said, right, okay. You don't know what it is. She said, no, they said it's a saline flush. They gave me the steroid and said it was going to melt my tumor away. I said, steroids don't melt your tumor away. I said, Paloma, have you consented to chemotherapy? And she said, no, I don't want to have chemotherapy. And she said, I'm afraid of them. So I said, okay, I'll be there tomorrow. So I arrive at the hospital. And when I get in, there's another bag going in with the yellow sticker on. And I said, excuse me, what is that? And I couldn't read it. Now, it should have a sticker on it with the drug. It should be the dosage of the drug. It should be the time, the date, and it should be signed by whatever doctor put that drug into the bag.
Did you photograph any of this? Did you photograph any of it or film it or anything?
We've got everything. I've got all the charts. I've got Paloma's subject access, which we got within 24 hours of her coming home. We put this in legally. She put the hospital on notice and the consultants. So I said, what is it? And the nurse said, it's respiracase. Now, I said, okay, Paloma, did you know that you were having this drug? And she said, no, what is it? They said it's a flush. So I have a drugs.com app on my phone, just to keep you in here. I trained as a nurse in 1984. I've done lots more training since then. I became an independent nurse prescriber. I'd worked in the busiest A&E in Europe. I did an advanced trauma and life support course ran by Paul Temple at Maidstone Hospital years before. I'd worked in a plethora of settings. I sutured. I'd done venipuncture, I could take bloods, I could plaster. I'd worked as a senior nurse at NHS Direct, one of the inaugural nurses on the emergency phone led line. I wasn't just a basic trained, put it that way. So the nurse came in, and whilst I'm looking at what respiricase is, I said, excuse me, could we have Paloma, is this okay with you? She said, yes. I said, could we have all of the bloods that you've just taken overnight? And could we have the histology, please? And she said, I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to give it to you. And I said, Paloma, would you like those? She said, yes, I'd like them. And I said to the nurse, you have to give them. First of all, it's the law. And second, you're now in breach of your code of professional conduct with the NMC. So you must give it to the patient when she's requested them. She said, I'm not allowed to print them off. And I said, okay, would you go and write them down? And could you date, time and sign it? And she said, well, why would I do that? And I said, so if there's any anomalies, if there's anything that's not written down correctly, we know, you know, who's done it. So she went away and she came back and she came back. And a nurse came back, but it was a sister that came back and she just carried on. She didn't speak to me. She footed around with this bag. And I said, excuse me, do you have the histology in the blood? She said, we're not allowed to give them to you or Paloma. We were specifically told this afternoon by Dr. Mohan on a ward round, we're not to give you any results or Paloma or anybody for this patient. Now, that is also written in the nursing notes, which I have through subject access. So that is proven that those nurses broke the law and Dr. Mohan has broken the law. And Dr. Arunadeya Mohan is in contempt of three courts, the Supreme Court ruling, the Montgomery versus Lanarkshire case, where she didn't inform Paloma what I'm about to tell you. And she's also in she's in contempt of the High Court, where she wrote a statement.
You say, Kate, hang on. You say
No. I am telling you.
You're telling me your opinion. I'm not saying
it's wrong or right.
This is your opinion.
No, I'm not telling you my opinion.
She's not here to answer this. I can't have this.
No, I'm not telling you my opinion, Richie. I'm telling you that we have the evidence unequivocally, which we have put into the Supreme Court. We've put into the police. We've put into the hospital. We've put into the coroner.
What did the police say?
So you've unequivocal evidence.
Okay, listen.
Hang on, let me finish.
Okay, I need to come back to
Dr. Arunadeya Mohan has written a statement to the High Court and to the Coroner's Court. And in that statement, she has said that she made Paloma's blood results and all of her histology, etc., available to Paloma. She's also stated that Paloma had a confirmed diagnosis of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma B. And yet, in all of the documentation, it states from several pathologists a differential diagnosis that could not be confirmed in this specimen, couldn't be confirmed because they didn't have enough. So they couldn't give a precise diagnosis. Therefore, they should have told Paloma this and they should have offered her another biopsy and offered FISH testing, which it states there that they needed to do further tests, the FISH testing. However, later in an email to our pathologist, they couldn't do the FISH testing because there wasn't enough specimen left. So Dr. Arunadeya Mohan told Paloma that she had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma B. She didn't say it was differential. She didn't offer her another histology. She didn't offer her further testing. Paloma's bloods did not indicate at that stage lymphoma. Paloma's symptoms did not indicate lymphoma. They did indicate infection. Also, Paloma had in her notes an ECG of her heart that showed she had partial bundle branch block, which is contraindicated with respiracase. Respiracase.
We're getting very technical, Kate. Kate, we're really getting technical here. It's losing
me. I'm going to explain what they are.
So if it's losing me, I know it's losing some of the listeners here.
Hang on.
Let me do this. You confirm if I understand here. So your belief and the belief of your ex-husband and others is that she was wrongly diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, that this might be the case. Now, hang on. You also said that there was evidence of miscarriage conduct by Mohan and others. And you said you'd submitted that to the police and other authorities. Have they acknowledged receipt of this? Have they accepted that?
Only one, they've acknowledged receipt, but they've all closed down.
Why?
Now, let me tell you, I'm not alleging. I'm telling you the unequivocal facts in front of me from the subject access notes. So Paloma received two infusions of raspiricase, which is for tumor lysis. Paloma's blood results did not indicate that she was suffering tumor lysis. She received an extremely high dose of prednisolone. On the notes, it says 50 milligrams.
That's a big steroid, isn't it?
And there was four dosages of steroids. However, in Dr. Mohan's letter, she writes 90 milligrams. When you give these two drugs together, they are part of the chemotherapy regime. Paloma was also given drugs and told that they were painkillers and Fragmin, but they were not. They were the pre-chemo drugs, such as omeprazole and acyclovir. And I'll get onto that in a minute. In order to give raspiricase and prednisolone, you must sign a very standard and specific consent form, which is required by every hospital in the United Kingdom. You must sign it.
But tell me why. Why? I mean, I've been to hospitals before visiting people. I've been a patient in a hospital. I've never been asked to sign a consent form when a doctor says, Richie, I think this drug is the one to go with, or I think this combination of therapies, Richie. They never ask you to sign anything. Why would they, in this case, need to ask for a signature?
It is called, I'll tell you what it stands for. That particular set of drugs is a chemotherapy regime that goes with R-CHOP. It can kill you. One in five die during it. Raspiricase can be deadly. It's a very dangerous drug, very expensive. It's a very, very dangerous drug. Together with prednisolone, extremely dangerous. It causes your T lymphocytes, your fighter cells, to plummet. That's what happened to Paloma. It causes your erythrocytes, your oxygen-carrying cells, to plummet. That's what happened to Paloma straight away. It can cause pulmonary edema. That happened to her. It can kill you. These are part of a standard treatment protocol.
Before chemo, you said. Before chemo, yeah.
And you must have everything explained to you, and you must sign this systemic anti-cancer therapy consent form. It's a regime-specific consent form developed by Cancer Research in the UK in partnership with many hospitals. It includes tumor site-specific forms. It is very important that you signed it. You sign it before you can really receive anything.
And it's your allegation that this wasn't made clear to Paloma and her signature wasn't sought. So this is your allegation.
There is no consent form signed in the notes, and Paloma's own statement to the High Court and her statement to the hospital is all there.
Well, can I jump back in if you don't mind? You're listening to Kate Chemerani. Kate is known, I suppose, around the world these days as the natural nurse in a toxic world. We're talking about a number of things here. The BBC ran a programme last night where Kate's sons and others allege that Kate interfered with the treatment of Paloma, who had been diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. They alleged, the sons and friends, that this interference by Kate ultimately led to Paloma's death. Now, Kate is maintaining, and you did say this last time you were on, Kate is maintaining that she's seen evidence that suggests that maybe Paloma didn't have non-Hodgkin's, maybe she was misdiagnosed, and that she was given treatments that
No, I haven't said she's misdiagnosed. I've said she's had a histology that cannot confirm, based on that specimen, that she has a precise diagnosis of non-Hodgkin's.
So you're basically saying, how did they come to that conclusion? Because the histology might have suggested otherwise. I kind of get that.
Well, they should have. What they should have done was they should have ruled out infection based on her symptoms. Also, once they did the biopsy, she got the worst headache ever in the back of her head and extreme itching of her arms and legs. So one has to then consider, is it Aspergillus? Is it Aspergillus flavus? could it be that she's got TB or latent TB? She was given the TB vaccine when she was a premature baby, when she was 2 days old and weighed 4 pounds, which she should have never have had. And that's my fault.
Let me jump in there again.
And her
sorry,
brother
Kate.
Does have heart. Her brother has had heart.
Well, you can't talk about that, Kate. That's outrageous. He's not here. And he's entitled to his privacy.
I can't talk
You shouldn't
about
do
what?
That. You can't,
talk about
you can't talk about your son's medical issues on this program. It's wrong, Kate.
Set, Richie.
You can't do that.
When my son was under 18, he collapsed. He collapsed. He was in the resuscitation room. He missed his mock A-levels. He missed his A-levels.
Yeah, but he might not want you talking about that on this program,
he was under 18, in my care. I was his parent.
Yeah, but he's not under 18 now, Kate.
He was under 18, and I can talk about this.
No, you can't. Not without his permission. You can't do that.
What happened to my daughter could very much happen to him. He had ECGs showing the same electrical anomaly. And she suffered syncopes, where she would faint.
Kate, I'm going to ask you, hang on, hang on.
If this happens to him, and he is given a dosage like she got of adrenaline, it could happen to him.
Yeah, but you send an email to him. Listen, look, I respect you, and I'm asking you to respect the program. I'm a nice guy. I think you're a decent person. Don't talk about his medical history. He's not consented to it. It's wrong. I understand why you're doing it.
I can speak about when he was under 18.
Not on air, you can't, Kate. He's not under 18 now.
For him.
Listen, let me ask you this. Let me ask you this before you end up falling out with me. Let me ask you this. There are people listening to the program and they're saying, she's an articulate woman. She's an educated woman. I'm sure she was a decent nurse when she worked in nursing. But what the feck does she know about oncology and treating people? We're all experts when we pick up the Britannica book of medical information. But why are people will be saying these doctors and these consultants, they knew a damn sight more about the best way to look after Paloma than you did, even though you're her mum and you have the best intentions in the world. Some people, I'm going to be honest, the majority of people messaging me now are in support of you. The majority. But some people are saying, why doesn't she get out of the way of the people who know what they're doing?
Okay. First of all, I was not Paloma's therapist. There you go. I was not her therapist. I supported what she wanted to do. She also went for a second opinion. She went to see a cardiologist. I took her there. So what she did, she wanted to know what was wrong with her. She had this differential diagnosis. Now, there was a golden opportunity missed. They treated her with drugs without her consent, and they did it covertly. They didn't tell her. She was 22. She was an adult. That is against the law. It is medical battery.
But they
that
denied
is what
this.
It is.
They denied this, don't they? I mean, they denied this outright.
They have not denied it. Because all of the evidence is there. They cannot deny it.
But there is an inquest.
That's
hang on, hang
we're
on.
We're having this charade going on right now.
Well, there's an inquest about to start, right?
Police.
Sorry, Kate. There is an inquest into Paloma's death is imminent, right?
Yes.
Now, let's talk about that for a minute.
I'd just like to just clarify here. Paloma was treated against her will without consent. And it was done using connivance. She didn't know. They then released her the next day because she wouldn't sign a consent form. They continually tried to coerce her to sign a consent form. And she said, but I'm not sure if I'm having chemotherapy yet. I don't want to sign it. And they said, well, just sign it and then it's there and you don't have to worry about it.
Why do you think
they're pressing? Hang on a sec, Richie. This is really important.
Okay, go on.
I said... She said, Mummy, they're trying to pressure me to sign a consent form. And I said, well, you don't have to sign anything if you don't know what you're doing yet. She said, but they're telling me not to worry about it. Just sign it and it can sit there and I don't have to worry about it. I said, what do you mean? A consent form for what? When we knew that she'd had the drugs, I said, don't sign that. They're trying to get you to sign for something they've done retrospectively. Something has happened. We were correct. She then came home. Christmas Eve, they had to release her. She wouldn't sign this form. 2 days later, I thought they'd killed her. They were going to kill her because she was so ill. Her oxygen saturation went from normal, 100%, down to 72%. Her pulse went up to 144. She was vomiting. Her face was swollen. Her temperature was soaring. All her hair began to fall out within a week. all of the symptoms of the drugs they had given her, and quite clearly it had damaged her heart. She already had right partial bundle branch block on an ECG that no one had looked at. They should have done another histology. They should have offered it to her. They should have looked at something else. Then they start harassing her.
Who's they?
So she discharged the doctor, the consultant. They said that she was under coercion. She wasn't. She was an articulate woman. She then, they wanted her to go and have her eggs retrieved, save her eggs. She didn't want to do that. She was terrified of them, utterly terrified.
Kate, you've got to let me come back here. Hang on a second now. Look, you don't take a backward step, right? Not as long as I've been watching you on television or listening to you on the radio. I can understand. I'm not justifying this, so don't start screaming at me. I can understand because you're out there. Everybody knows who you are. You've been in the papers. Some very unfair things have been written about you. But maybe these people don't know that. They see this stuff. Maybe they genuinely believed that you were coercing her and that you were giving her bad advice. Maybe that was their genuinely held belief that we know better and Mum doesn't, and Mum's a mad conspiracy theorist and she's bringing her down this natural route which is going to kill her. Maybe that is what they believed. Maybe.
Well, you keep saying that, but I've just told you, we wanted her histology and her bloods. We wanted her histology and her bloods so we could go and get second opinions. We wanted to be absolutely certain what she had and what treatments were out there available to her, such as CAR T-cell therapy. She could have done several other therapies. She didn't need to do R-CHOP that killed one in five during. Now, the other thing she asked this Dr. Aaron Adeyemohan was, what is my survival at 2, 5, 7, and 10 years if I take your treatment? And she said, oh, it's, you know, it's, you know, 80%, you know, she's, so Paloma said, well, so one in five died during it. And she said, well, yes. And she said, so what's my long-term survival if I do it? And Dr. Mohan said she didn't know because there weren't the studies.
Right.
That was her exact words. So Paloma said to me, I don't want to take that chance. She's not telling me anything. So we wanted the histology and we wanted the bloods. When she did get the histology and it showed differential diagnosis could not be confirmed with this histology, there it was. There it was. Now, she was then so ill from the ruspuricase, so desperately ill. I took her to see a cardiologist. We needed to get a referral to a different hematologist. She was terrified. We then find out that they've been booked her in for the next chemotherapy at the clinic. Then it goes on and they start hounding her from the fertility services and the social worker. I took her to the GP. She had an appointment with the GP. She told the GP herself. I sat there. I said, if you want to do chemo, whatever you want to do, we'll support you. And she said, I don't want to do it. That is in the GP notes. The GP was there.
She made the decision.
Yeah. Statement.
She made the decision.
The GP said all of this in her statement to the court.
Kate, let me ask you this, right? So the inquest is going to begin in a few weeks' time. One of the most common questions this evening from people who follow you on social media, they're maybe members of your website, is, have you been given an understanding as to how the inquest is going to work, and will you and your ex-husband, will you be invited to, or do you have a right to give testimony to the inquest?
Okay, first of all, it's important that every single one of your viewers gets themselves educated on coronial law. That's the first thing. Don't wait till something happens. Your inquest should always be in the place where you lived, where you were treated and where you died. And the job of the coroner is to determine the place, the time and the cause of death. My daughter lived and was treated and died in Sussex. So the punctum temporis, which is Latin for point in time, of Paloma's death, the medical cause of her death, is the 19th of July, where she said she couldn't breathe. She was eating. It was the hottest day. It was July 19th. I went upstairs. I sat with her. She was having panic attacks because they'd dragged her through the High Court. And I will go back to that in a minute. When the paramedics came, so Let me tell you that event. Let me tell you the event. People don't know the event yet, but there was two of us there. So I sat with Paloma and she was having a panic attack while she was eating. Often when she would eat potatoes or rice, it would sometimes she would struggle to swallow. I suffer from that as well. And her older brother suffered from it. She then just her head went back and her eyes rolled back in her head and she got bubbles coming out her mouth. And I wasn't sure if she'd choked or what had happened. I immediately laid her on her side in the recovery position. I had my phone in my hand. I ran downstairs, took the chain off my door and opened the lock, ran into my treatment room, which I have because it was an aesthetics room, but I also do IV vitamins, grabbed a Gadel Airway and ran upstairs in less than 30 seconds whilst phoning my friend. And all I said was, come ring an ambulance. She was at my home within 3 minutes. I had Paloma on her back. I put a Gadel Airway in. I pulled her head back so it opened her airway. And I tried to find a pulse. I couldn't find one. I commenced CPR immediately and my friend rang an ambulance. She'd arrived. I then stopped because Paloma was not cyanosed. She wasn't blue. And I looked for a minute and I'd said cardiac and respiratory arrest, mediastinal mass. That's all I said. Paloma wasn't cyanosed at all. And I looked at her. And I said to my friend, run downstairs, get my oxygen saturation monitor. It's a really expensive one, a couple of hundred quid, and my stethoscope. She came upstairs with two stethoscopes and the oxygen sats monitor. I said, put it on her finger. It's a big, expensive one. She put it on. It started beeping. And there it was. Pulse 110, pulse 144, oxygen saturation going up 43, 44, 55. It was going up. I put the stethoscope on. I listened and there was a pulse. An apex pulse. I said, she's got a pulse. And we stopped. Then it disappeared off the monitor. So I started again and it came back and so on. She was never, ever cyanosed. She was never clammy. She was just pale. She was pale. Her legs were slightly out. Her feet were falling to the sides. She was just lying there, unconscious. I wasn't sure if she choked, if she had food. I wasn't sure, but she was definitely not cyanosed. The first responder came in with these ridiculous long 2-inch nails. And when it went off the machine, went to do CPR and I stopped her. I moved her out of the way with these nails. I've never seen anything like it. When the paramedic arrived, he came in. And we had by that stage, I have an oxygen machine. We had a nasal cannula on full flow in Paloma for oxygen. So she received oxygen the entire time. I have that because of when she was first sick. And also it's good for my room. Downstairs. So the paramedic came in and in his hand was an intraosseous gun where you shoot someone in the tibia with the gun to put a drug in, which is unusual because I only ever know that you use that when someone doesn't have any tissue or you can't get a vein or if it's a child or if it's a burns victim. And he shot her in the leg. Now, then more and more paramedics piled in and he gave three doses. It should be 1 milligram every 3 minutes. She only weighed 37 kilos the day before. So that eventually she had four doses. She had three doses in 6 minutes, 37 seconds instead of between 9 and 15 minutes. When you have your third dose, according to the paramedic two trials and the French trial, your brain is finished because it causes all of the little blood vessels to constrict and all the blood doesn't go to that area and it goes to your heart. Now, he gave it far too quickly. He didn't follow any protocol. That is not the protocol, 6 minutes, 37. How can I say that? Because I have personally seen the life pack machine print out from them that came with them. So it's all there. The evidence right. is all
yeah,
there.
This is important because I know nothing about any of this. I know nothing about these procedures and I'm completely blind here and I have to kind of take your word for it. So you think that this might have hastened, or not hastened, but this might have contributed to
her passing
away.
According to the paramedic two and the paramedic and the paramedic two trial from Warwick University, which there was a paramedic three trial live in our area at that time. Half the people get it in the IV, which is the best way. The other half get it into intraosseous, which is the worst way to give it. She was given three doses in just over 6.5 minutes, which is not in any protocol. It increases the risk of brain injury. Giving it that fast is a massive exponential increase in brain injury. Then comes the doctor and the paramedic, and they put in a femoral line, and they begin to give drugs that are used, that should only be used in a hospital setting. They're also used in organ retrieval. They are paralyzing drugs, very, very strong paralyzing drugs. And they gave her another drug in the bedroom that is also a drug which causes constriction. So now my 37 kilo tiny daughter, who had a heartbeat, which means she wasn't supposed to get adrenaline, because according to their own LifePak machine, it states she was not in cardiac arrest.
Help me out here.
Their
You've got to help me out. Hang on.
Their own paperwork does not lie.
You've got to help me out here. How? Explain to us how you're alleging incompetence, the likes of which I've not come across. Ever.
Have you not, Richie? Let me tell you, it happens all the time. I've worked in there.
I know, but listeners, some listeners are going to be incredulous here. They're going to be saying, Kate, you basically want us to believe that these paramedics turned up and that basically Cheech and Chong turned up, idiots who didn't know what they were doing. That's what it's...
I'm saying a paramedic did not follow the protocol.
Why though? Why wouldn't he have done that?
A paramedic overdosed a 37 kilo girl.
And can you think why?
How did he know that she was 37 kilos? Because he said to myself and my friend who was present, she's very slight, and I said she's under 6 stone. How did he know that himself? He couldn't get an adult gel airway in, and he couldn't get an adult cannula in. He had to go down to an adolescent size.
Fair enough, right.
He should have titrated. He should have used a smaller dose. So, he continued. And then I watched my daughter go ashen blue in front of me. And what came out my mouth was, fuck, they've killed her. That was what I said, standing in the hall with my hand over my mouth, because they'd just given her metaraminol, another vasoconstrictor. They then call acicillin. Of course they did. They caused it. They caused a massive circulatory collapse with an overdose of adrenaline, as is well documented in all literature on PubMed, on all of the literature, in Singapore, in Japan,
yeah.
In Scandinavia.
But you're not answering my question.
In Denmark.
Why,
they
Kate?
Don't use adrenaline. How? And they have a 25%
okay.
survival.
Listen,
it's all there.
It's 6:30 and we've only got about 15 to 20 minutes left, right? So let's just say that I accept every word you've said there. You were there, I wasn't there. You're speaking with a passion that belies my imagining that you might be lying. I don't think
you're
lying.
Did you have a COVID vaccine?
No, of course,
Richie?
I didn't have a
COVID.
Not that it's anybody's business.
Why did you not have a COVID vaccine, Richie?
Because I've been talking about vaccine injuries on the radio for 15 years.
Now, hang on a minute. Did the nurses not tell you it's good for you? You should take it. Did the government not tell you
I know
good
where
for
you're
did
going
with
not?
It. Did Dr. Malhotra not? So now you're standing here telling me on your show that we
I'm
should
not telling
listen
you anything.
To oncologists.
I'm not telling you anything.
I'm just saying. I'm putting... Not you.
I get what you're saying,
I'm speaking,
yeah.
I'm speaking... So but, we're told, forget that the government is your mummy and daddy and you were all told to take the COVID shot. Or they would never lie about anything else. They would always do right by you when oncology makes billions. I am telling you right now, there was a drug trial. Warwick University, please look it up, the Paramedic 2 trial, the Paramedic 3 trial. It has been done on the citizens of the United Kingdom without them knowing. The World Health Organization is now adopting it. When you receive 1 milligram of adrenaline every 3 minutes, up to 10 doses, and they know after 3, it states it in their own studies, your brain is done. They are now adopting that, knowing that it kills 97.3% of those who receive it, leaving 2.3% survival in their own records. In one state in America, they don't use it, over 60% survival. South Korea, 25% survival just by bystander doing CPR. Then you've got Denmark, 33% not using it. Why is the United Kingdom adopting this protocol up and down that is going to kill the majority by destroying your brain? Oh, and what a surprise. What does that make you as of the 1st of May 2020? Sorry, the 20th of May 2020? It makes you all organ donors, right
yeah, but,
there.
Yeah, but you don't have to convince me that there is a lot wrong with medicine and medical practice in this country. I've been doing programs like this since 2009, interviewing people, some of whom are no longer with us, doctors who blew the whistle on organ harvesting, doctors who blew the whistle on vaccines that cause terrible injuries and that maybe related to autism. I've been doing this for years. You don't have to convince me of that. I'm just saying the level of incompetence staggers me. If you are right, and you don't have to jump down my throat and shout at me, I'm not saying you're lying. If you are right and they screwed up like that when Paloma still had a very good chance, that is frightening levels of incompetence. I mean, was the person suspended?
Richie, I've got the documents in front of me. I'm looking at them. These are the documents that are in the court bundle.
And where's the paramedic now? Is the paramedic still working?
Guess what? The paramedics all got together and did what? A self-exculpatory statement. The paramedic stood in my hallway sweating. He was sweating so much, I offered him a bottle of water. He kept laughing, giggling. And then he went outside. He was acting very nervous because he knew. I was watching. I was looking at the clock opposite. They gave her. They didn't follow the protocol. And then on top of that, I've got a list of the drugs. They gave her.
Just before you give me the drugs, hang on. Just before you give me the drugs, will the inquest be public or will it be state? Will it be private, number one? And number two...
Well, first of all, the inquest...
Won't let me even ask a question. Jesus Christ.
They have no jurisdiction to hold the inquest in Kent. Penelope Schofield is the senior coroner in Sussex. She moved this inquest out of Sussex. She's overseeing the deaths at the Brighton Hospital. Yes, the Brighton Hospital. She moved the inquest out of Sussex into Kent. She was in prison in 1997 for perverting the course of justice, for lying for her detective constable boyfriend. She was jailed for 3 months. He was jailed for 18 months. She was supposed to lose her license, but she didn't. It was suspended for 2 years. Then she gets a coroner's job, a senior coroner's job. She moves it out. They state that she didn't have treatment, my daughter, in Sussex. Yes, she did. She was treated by the paramedics. She ended up in the intensive care where several days later they had to do a drain for all the fluid around her heart. She had copious amounts of pink frothy mucus coming out of her nose in the suction containers. What is that indicative of? Adrenaline overdose. Then another coroner ticks that my daughter is not to have any tissue samples taken or toxicology or autopsy. And all the medical paraphernalia was removed from her before she went down to the mortuary. Why? We asked for our daughter to have a brain scan, a CT or an MRI before they switched the ventilator off because they said she was brainstem dead. In front of three other witnesses, myself, my ex-husband and two friends, the consultant said, I can't do that because she's not stable enough. And if she dies on the table, it will upset my staff. So apparently you can die twice. That is fact. We've all done sworn statements. The ventilator was turned off. We had to tell them. We put them on legal notice. And he told me that he was standing down the organ team. My daughter had opted out of organ donor when it first came in. She'd opted out. Let me tell you what's in every single department, intensive care department up and down the country, employed by the organ retrieval service, a SNOD, a specialized organ donor nurse, who goes around, I would say, like a vulture. She identifies potential donors. That's what she does. What's the best donor under 30 with a beating heart and a circulation on a ventilator? Since the 1st of June, Matt Hancock signed the document. The UK is going to be the biggest organ donors in the world, offering organs to all of the Commonwealth. The organ donor has gone up over 40% since they bought in that everyone is an organ donor.
You've got to opt out. Yeah. And I've covered that. And I understand this.
In Kent. My daughter did not live in Kent.
No, but it's happening in Kent anyway. So we look. And by the way, you referenced the chair of the inquest. Kate made some statements about the chair of the inquest. What Kate said about her is true. It's in the public domain. It was in the newspapers.
She's not the chair of the inquest. She is the senior coroner in Sussex.
Excuse me, the senior coroner. My apologies. Yeah, the things you said about her are true. I just want to put that out there in case people are wondering why I'm not jumping in.
Been in jail.
Look at the time, right? We've got 15 minutes left. I want to ask you this. Look, let me sum up as best as I understand it. And first of all, I do mean this, Kate. You know, we haven't met. She isn't Paloma. Her anniversary is next month. I can't imagine. I'll never know what it's like for a mother to lose a child. So I completely understand your passion, the anger that's coming through. I completely get that. But I want to stay with kind of where I see things. You reckon you've got reams and reams and reams and pages and pages and pages of evidence. To your credit, you've sent me a lot of it, and I was able to sift through quite a bit of it today.
I've only sent you.
Yeah.
I cannot send
you. Let me finish before you start jumping in on me. Hang on. You've sent me loads, right? And I am going to read it. And even before you came on last time.
I haven't sent you anything from the coroner's
No, I know you haven't.
I cannot, because that would be contempt.
No, I understand
that. What I have sent you is from Paloma's own bundle in the High Court.
Yeah. Thanks.
The coroner's bundle
I could have
has
said that.
All the evidence in it. Every drug that was administered and by who and the times, they're all in there. They're all in there.
Irrespective.
My daughter did not die of a differential
No, you
diagnosis.
Reckon she died. You that reckon she was killed by malpractice. Do you
the
think?
The punctum temporis, the point
right. Do you think
in
the
time,
inquest is
the
going
medical
to determine this?
Death.
You didn't
the
answer.
The medical cause of death.
Right.
The medical cause of death of Paloma was an overdose of adrenaline.
That's what you reckon.
Of metaraminol.
Hang on a sec. They say she died of a heart attack. You say otherwise. I get this. I know what you're saying. Let me ask you a question you didn't answer. Will you be entitled to give evidence at the inquest?
As an interested person and next of kin, I am qua advocate for my daughter.
So you will do?
I will be qua advocate. I have every legal right, and the coroner does not possess the right to neither grant nor deny. And that is in law and common law and case law. She tried to deny me the right, and I've put it to her. She doesn't have the right to grant nor deny. I was informing her. I wasn't asking her permission. I will be qua advocate for my daughter. And I will then have the same rights to cross-examine and to question. I will also have the rights to bring in witnesses. We have our own pathologist. Not a single piece of histology, pathology, was taken from our daughter at the inquest. At the autopsy, they didn't even open her head to confirm brainstem death and brain injury. They didn't take any measurements. They didn't take any tissue samples. They didn't take any blood, and they did no toxicology of the liver, even though we requested it. They had a perfect opportunity. That should have been a forensic autopsy if they've ordered this amount and there's an ongoing police investigation. So who said don't do it? A coroner told them not to take any of those tissue samples. We've had an independent pathologist look over that autopsy. It's a notopsy. It's a notopsy. It's a nothing burger. It proves nothing. He's put down on there a cause of death that he doesn't have a single tissue sample anywhere in the United Kingdom to prove it. Because the original histology says differential diagnosis could not be confirmed with this tissue sample, this specimen. So where he's came up with that from, I haven't got a clue. But it's been moved out of Sussex. Of course it has. They wouldn't want anybody looking that close now, would they? So they're trying to say she died of cancer. The doctors who they are bringing in hadn't even seen her in 7 months. So the punctum temporis, the point in time, the medical cause of death was the drugs that they overdosed her with for her slight frame. And they've done everything to cover it up since. And as far as I'm concerned, I will not ever allow anybody in the United Kingdom, while ever there is breath in my body, just to say, folks, I would never commit suicide. I am a Christian. I answer to one God only.
Do you know the tragedy here? The tragedy here for me, Paloma's death is the only real tragedy, but there's also a tragedy of journalism. You maintain vociferously and emotionally and passionately that what you have said is true. Don't jump in. Don't jump in just yet. This is what you believe, and you believe that you
I
have...
I don't believe the facts.
Can you let me finish, Kate? Kate, look, I've put up with a lot of it now, the screaming. Just please now. Look, I totally understand where you're coming from, but let me finish. I've got to say this. I'm a professional journalist. The people who cared for Paloma, right, you'll say they didn't. The people who cared for her, they will say, no, we didn't kill her. We didn't mistreat her. We're not guilty of malpractice. That's what they're going to say. The tragedy for me is I'll never get to put the points that you've made to me this evening to them on a radio program like this. This is a tragedy. Even more tragic is you've given a lot of this, and you will in the future give a lot of it to the BBC Panorama programme, and I know they won't even read it. They're hardly likely to go to the doctors who worked on Paloma and put these points to them. That's the horrific nature of what we're doing in 2025 in journalism. You say you know this is what happened. I believe that this is what you believe. I know you believe this. And people ultimately have to make their own mind up, listen to it. But I've got to ask you this, because somebody claiming to be Sebastian has asked me to put this to you. And it might not be Sebastian, but to repeat that, it was basically a madhouse growing up with you and Dad, because it was lizards and 9/11 and all the rest of it. They allege there was physical abuse there. This is what they're saying, that there was physical abuse growing up, that they were beaten at times by you, by Dad. They're saying things on Twitter like they're determined to ruin you, to finish you. They're talking about defamation cases and stuff. How do you deal with all of that? These are your sons, like. And this is not a kind of a, you know, me throwing this at you to try and upset you or discredit you.
If there was any evidence of that, they wouldn't have been with me or their father. There would have been evidence of that in school. There would have been evidence of that growing up. I don't know what their motives are. I do know that they were trying to hatch a plot to take my house from me. I know that, and that's already been in the courts. My daughter's put it in her statement. Paloma put it in hers, and she admitted it, what they were trying to do. They were trying to take the family home that was worth quite a bit of money. And they, I don't know why they're doing what they're doing. I really don't know. But I can tell you now, and everybody should know this, why would social services and the schools miss such things? Why did those boys thrive in school? Why did they get as far as they got if they were suffering such abuse? Children don't. That's nonsense. As for lizards, their father doesn't believe in that. And I never talk about it because I didn't know. I was too busy raising four children, taking them to activities every night. And then I got cancer in 2012. I also went to university in 2010 to get my nursing qualification back. So I didn't know anything about it. My ex-husband is a brilliant, intelligent man, Dr. Shemarani, as they missed off. Yes, he was very involved in what happened in 9/11. That was part of his PhD, controlled explosions, I believe, etc.
Yeah.
And he'd been very, very involved in all of that. And, you know, he was very into a lot of things. And why not? Why do we have, we all know the truth about all of these things. My interest was always medical. My children did not have the HPV vaccine. My children did not. The girls did not have the COVID shots. They didn't want to. From when I got cancer, I realized that I'd been wrong to vaccinate my children. It was a terrible thing. And I'd done it out of ignorance and didn't question it. So I stopped doing any of that. I know that they had a wonderful, very affluent upbringing. They went on lots of holidays. They had opportunities other children could only dream of. They had everything. Everything. I'm just a humble girl. I came from a council house as a young child. Then my parents bought a little house. They had everything. Sebastian's a beautiful pianist. I bought a piano when I got pregnant. Sebastian came here just before Paloma got sick. He hasn't seen Paloma since then because he was very unkind to her. He was estranged from her. Gabriel came to my house Christmas Eve with the boyfriend and they raced upstairs. He assaulted her.
That's alleged.
It took 2 hours. It's in our police statements.
Yeah, it's alleged. I know Paloma alleged. I know that, but he denies it. He denies it.
We've sworn statements. Lots of us have sworn statements, including my friend, but it's in with the High Court. And we got him out of the house several hours later. It was the two of them. And just to say, and I will say this publicly, using my own daughter's police statements, which she sent to Joe Shiner with the crime reference number, which she also said to the High Court, she was devastated that her brothers would side with a young man who she alleged sexually assaulted her. She then went into much more graphic detail. She told the history of the relationship. She was in counselling with a senior psychiatrist psychologist who told her that she'd been professionally groomed by him and his mother. My daughter had to go through all of that in a High Court where they were trying to force me out of the house that I own, put the ex-boyfriend who'd she said it's sexually assaulted, as she made a sworn statement.
Yeah, but he was never charged, and nothing was ever proven against him. I'm not saying that your daughter lied, but he has every right to say, I wasn't charged with anything, and I wasn't found guilty of anything. And he might say that this is, you know...
open. It's an open investigation. This is the same young man who also got my other daughter to hide drugs. Now, this is all out there.
No, these are allegations made by Oriana and others, but there is no proof of any of these allegations.
The police have been told my daughter made a statement. It went into the High Court. It went to the police. It doesn't matter.
I know. I can tell the police tonight that you're the Boston Strangler, though, Kate. You know what I mean? I know she said it, and I'm not calling your daughter a liar, but he has a right to due process, and he has a right to say, I wasn't found guilty of anything.
My daughter had the right to choose her treatment. She was 22. She was 23 when she died. She was an articulate, intelligent young woman. They wanted her removed from the house. It would have been in handcuffs, forced into chemotherapy, and probably forced into taking her eggs. They got a legal firm to represent them pro bono, who interestingly specialized in fertility services and posthumous ownership of eggs. Really? They wanted me removed from my home that I own and pay all the bills and instill the ex-boyfriend's mother, who my daughter had blocked them all. Do you see the madness? They went to a high court. Where is the human rights in this? They put my daughter under so much stress. She was estranged from them. I have her diaries. I hadn't read her diaries till after she died. I've read them all. And what's written in them, I'll release the whole lot, including all of the blood results, the drugs she was given. I've shown those drug results to a professor who's very well known, who you will know who he is.
Yeah.
And he said, good Lord, those drugs. I went to a senior paramedic who said, that would have murdered her. It is a huge amount of drugs for a 37 kilogram. We are looking at probably gross negligence manslaughter.
Right, now, do you have, because we've only got 90 seconds left today. Look, I want to reiterate, I come across sometimes as maybe being a bit harsh, but...
No, you come across as very fair.
It's live, no, but it's live radio, right? And there are people who, they're like, even though you've been all over the papers and all that, there are still some people like, who the hell is this woman? And then there are people like, who's the hell is this presenter? People listening to me for the first time. So, you've got to be fair to everybody. Final question to you. It's a stupid question because you've already answered it, I think. Do you hold any hope at all that the inquest will be properly conducted? In a way that will give...
I think that we are facing very tyrannical times. If you have a coroner as a senior coroner in a position that was in jail for perverting the course of justice that should never have been given a coroner's role, who's kicked the inquest out to a different county, that should tell you everything. However, that protocol of 1 milligram every 3 minutes, you are all going to end your lives on the end of a 999 call, whether you die in your bed, collapse outside, have a heart attack, whatever. They're going to call the paramedics. You're going to get 1 milligram every 3 minutes into your leg. It's going to kill 2.3% survival, is it? I think it's 2.7 or 2.3. You're going to have a 97% death rate. It's coming to each and every one of you. They know. They're using a military-grade intraosseous gun from Teva Pharmaceuticals in Israel. The majority of the adrenaline comes from Teva Pharmaceuticals in Israel. Merck, at the moment, the market is $3.6 billion, set to rise to $7.11 billion for adrenaline. They're going to be using much more of it. This is something of massive national interest. You need to get behind me. You need to get behind this because they are trying to cover it up. They are bringing this in for everyone. The World Health Organization has even mentioned the paramedic trial. It's Warwick University, Gavin Perkins. This is of massive national interest, and it tags into organ donor. We are going to be the biggest organ donors in the world. It is in the critical care document. Please go down my Twitter feed, my Substack. I've published papers on it.
I will put
this
the links on the notes.
This is what happened to my daughter, and it's going to happen to someone you know if it hasn't already. You are just fortunate that I was savvy enough and had a researcher that we spotted it. I've worked in that arena, and we've uncovered it all. And for the love of my daughter, I will not allow them to keep this hidden because I've got another daughter. I've got two sons. You've all got children. This could be your child. What do you think happened to those babies in the Letby case? They would have received adrenaline. And the amount of adrenaline given to UK babies is much bigger than Europe.
We might talk about the Letby case in the near future.
All of your blood vessels in your brain collapse. People, this is of national interest. Paramedic 2 trials, Paramedic 3 trials, Warwick University, National Organ Donor Retrieval Service. 50% of those who they take the organs from start to open their eyes or fight back or move. I spoke to a pathologist of 25 years. Has it ever happened when you've been cutting someone? No, never. Why? Because they're dead. So why do 50% start moving when they're taking their organs? You cannot take an organ from a cadaver. You have to be alive. What do they use? Paralytic drugs, which they used on my daughter.
Kate, we're just about out of time, right? So what I'm going to do is, I know those other subjects are covered widely on your Substack and on the website. So I'm obviously going to put notes. Sorry, I'm obviously going to put the links on the podcast notes, which I will do. The podcast will be online. This is live, obviously, but it will be online in about a half an hour. I know, and even if it was the first time I'd met you, I know that you cared and loved your daughter very deeply, and it's an awful thing to be going through. And I'm sorry that journalism is in the state that it's in today, that the BBC can put out garbage like that last night and exploit everybody, I believe. Exploit Paloma's memory, exploit the brothers and the friends and all of that. It's crap. It's not journalism. It's just disgusting, really. I wish you well.
Propaganda.
It's propaganda, yeah. And like we were saying on other programs in days gone by, while it's about you, it's not really ultimately about you. This is a much wider thing about silencing dissent and closing down debate and open conversations. Good luck with the inquest. Thanks for trusting us and coming on today to talk about it. I do mean that. And I hope we'll, as things progress with Lucy Letby and other cases, and as the inquest progresses, I hope you'll come back and kind of keep us up to date on it. And just thanks for your time. I mean it. And good luck now.
Thank you. And remember, today it was my daughter. Tomorrow it's going to be you and yours, because that adrenaline is a protocol that's been rolled out over Britain, and they're coming for all of you.
Kate, mind yourself, and thanks a lot. Kate Chemerani, live on The Richie Allen Show for Tuesday, the 24th of June, 2025.